This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it. Work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the ifanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 77, sponsored by geekarmor.com and Netflix.
I'm thinking about me and you, and what I've been thinking seems too good to be true, because I'm both so tired of crying, crying, crying all the time.
Hey, welcome to the ifanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 77, a number I like very much. I believe we were all born in 1977. Correct?
Woot.
Yes.
Indeed, woot, which makes us old. Anyway, I am Josh, and I'm here with old crotchety Ron.
Hey.
And old man Kilpatrick. It's Connor.
Get off my lawn, Flanagan.
Yes. I can't wait to have a shotgun and a rocking chair.
Damn you kids.
iFanboy.com is a comic book website and podcast entity, I would say. All three of us are iFanboy. We read comics. We like them. And every week, one of us will pick the favorite thing that they read from their stack that week. And that's the only rule. It just has to be the favorite thing that you read. And then we come here, or we write a review. It goes on the website on Wednesday night. And then we come here and do the podcast and talk about it and some other books. That's about how it works. Just we wanted to clarify between the two shows. We have a video show that comes out on Wednesday as well. The Wednesday show is about whatever topic strikes our fancy. So if we decide we want to talk about Alan Moore that week, we will do that. If we want to talk about sketches at cons like we did this week. We'll do that, and sometimes we just do some wacky stuff because what the heck. And then there's this show, the audio show, where we talk about the week's books every Sunday night. This show is going to be out on the web for you to listen to, and that's about it. Does that sound like I covered it? That work? Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Anyway, before we get started, a whole lot of books came out this week, and if you haven't gotten through all of them yet, which would make sense because, you know, there's only so many hours in a day, you may want to wait because we are going to talk about them, and if you haven't read them, you will have them spoiled like old cheese. And
yikes.
The man who was burdened with the lofty task, the horrible just job of having to go through all of his books and write this Wednesday night is Connor.
Yes, I got home Wednesday from the store and I took out my books. I put them down on the floor and I looked at the stack and it was very scary. It was about 2 inches thick.
Oh, man.
And it looked a lot thicker at home than it did at the store. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to suck. So, no, I didn't cheat. I read them all. I read them all. I had 17 books to read, and this was a week full of big events and lots of big things happening at JLA, JSA crossover, World War III at 52, and some other things we'll talk about later. But for me, the best book I read was the only book that stuck with me the entire night after every book I read subsequent to it, and that was Nightwing Annual Number 2. And the reason for that is because it was a small relationship tale within the big superhero world. And since the two other guys didn't read it, this is going to be a short discussion.
We're yeah. all softies.
And keep in mind, I looked for it. I tried to buy it today, but I couldn't find it. So
that's either good or bad. Probably bad.
Yeah, probably.
This is basically we all know that. Well, not all, but most people know. And if you don't know, now you'll know. Is that Nightwing was originally supposed to die in Infinite Crisis. And it's sort of I guess they lost their nerve at the very end, and
well, I don't know if they lost a nerve, rather it was corrected.
You could just see Geoff Johns like over a keyboard, like I can't do it, no.
Because I kind of wish they did because it would have been a really good story, but oh well. Anyway,
did anything
right? Well, regardless,
did it? Yeah. Let me. Did anything happen in Infinite Crisis? That.
What do you mean? Well, he was going off. He went off at the end with Superboy to stop the Menace, just the two of them, and presumably he would have died.
Okay.
In the process.
Now that Infinite Crisis happened, I don't know what the event was that.
You mean like the total culmination of the story?
What's the point?
I think that's a much bigger discussion.
Yeah, that'll derail the whole thing.
I guess I just want to know if I missed something. Go on. That would have to do with.
Yeah, no, not with this.
This is not related to Infinite Crisis.
Okay, sorry.
No.
Okay.
The only relation is that. The first scene is before he goes off with Superboy to save the world. He proposes marriage to Barbara Gordon, but he won't take her answer till afterwards. And then it jumps ahead. And now we find out what happened. Because now, in the 1 year later, they're not married, they're not dating, they're not really talking, they're not really together. So the question is what happened. And this is filling in that gap through a series of flashbacks following their entire relationship, starting off when they were teenagers as Robin and Batgirl. Hence the cover, where they are in the old costumes. And we follow them through their teen years, their younger adult years, their little bit older younger adult years. And I found it to be a very, very touching relationship portrayal in terms of two people who are clearly in love with each other and for some reason can't make it work, because mostly because of events outside their control, time and place and circumstance and being crippled and,
that's
cosmic events, things
that's
like that.
And
responsibility and the like.
Yeah, and then Dick being off with the Teen Titans. Just things happen, life gets in the way, and Dick is so responsible that he can't. One of his failings is that he won't indulge in, despite all the women he sleeps with, he won't indulge in personal glory or happiness in exchange for saving people. He'll rather go off and save the world than he would.
Oh, that's tragic.
Stay and work in his relationship. So, these two are my favorite couple of all of comics. And Dick is one of my favorite characters. So this was really resonated with me, and it stuck with me. After every book I read, I still found myself thinking about this comic. So that was a clear sign to me that this was the best book of the week.
Aw, sniff.
Yeah.
It's all Bruce's fault.
I'm an old softy.
You are. You're a big old. There's a big old heart inside that rough exterior of Connor.
We're all grumble, like grumble. That, though. We've all.
No, it wasn't.
No, I'm all about it being a big softy all around.
We've all picked books based on that. Like I was like, it was a nice date between Robin and the girl.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Totally.
And I know that Ron has.
Oh, I'm sure. I made a career out of it.
Now, there was one thing in this book that I wrote about in my review on iFanboy.com that almost ruined the whole thing and really made me angry, and that was something I've touched upon on the audio video show, which is that there was a flashback scene to Robin and Batgirl's... This would be the old, like, year two Batman. And Batman refers to Robin as Chum.
Ah, does he?
Yeah. He says, Robin, you okay, Chum? And I literally had to put the book down for 2 minutes and just, like,
just walk away.
And just get over it. Because I mentioned this in the show we did about how what characters we would change is that for some reason, whenever they write a flashback to Dick Grayson's time as Robin, it has to be hokey. And I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense within the current context of who Batman is.
Who wrote this? Yeah.
There's Mark Andreyko, who co-wrote Torso with Brad Bendis.
He writes Manhunter. Manhunter, yep.
Yep. Yep. And he did a really good job overall, besides that one scene, and then there was another awful bit of dialogue where Robin makes a stupid, like, oh, he said butt joke, like he's an immature teenager. But other than that, he's got a really good handle on Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon, so certainly better than anybody's written Robin in at least a year or two.
You mean Nightwing.
And Well, Nightwing. Sorry, he'll always be Robin.
Now I didn't buy this, so I don't, and I looked for it, and I couldn't find it, so I'm taking your word for it. But I assume the art was good, and I mean, all in all, it was a good comic.
Totally. The art was good. Not great, but it was good.
But this was a pretty big week for Nightwing, though, wasn't it? I mean, not in the regular DCU, because the World War III event started, and he figured prominently in the first book, didn't he?
Well, that was Jason Todd.
Right, I know, but the character.
Right. Yes. Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because that was a lot to talk about. Nightwing was my favorite book of the week. So we had 52 week 50, and we had the four World War III books, which tied into 52 week 50. I don't know, Ron, did you buy all of these?
Yeah, I did. Well, here's my story: is that I've been laughing at Connor for the past 2 weeks because Connor's been lamenting the 2-inch stack of books he's going to get this week.
He knew about this a week and a half ago. He's like, it's going to be bad next week.
And for some reason, and I've been laughing, saying, oh, I'm only getting 10 or 11 books, ha, 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 blah, 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 you know. And I went into I'm in San Francisco this week, and I went into Isotope on Wednesday to get my books, and I turned to Jared, and I said, World War III is 4 books this week? And he's just like, yes. And I was like, oh, I thought it was 1. And he looked at me, he's like, don't you do a website? And I was like, yeah, I do. I completely missed the boat that I didn't realize that World War III was 4 issues this week.
Yes. I realized I didn't read one news piece about that story. All I did was look at that one piece of art they brought out, and I was like, oh, yeah. We'll see when it comes.
But I had no idea that is it going to be 4 books every week now?
No, that's it. It's just this
week. Oh, that's it? Oh, okay. I was like, God almighty. So I went from buying 10 books and I ended up getting like 18 books as well. So I've been drowning. But so I sat down and read all these. And
before you say what you thought, because that's where it was going, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I had the opposite. I got in there and I wasn't sure if I was going to buy them or not. And I had a big, big stack too. I think had I bought them, I would have ended up with more than Connor. And I picked them up and I had them in my hand and I went over to like the other side to just sort of flip through them and I sort of looked and I went, I just don't care. For whatever reason, I didn't want to spend like another $10 on them. Like I wasn't interested or whatever. So I wanted to know, did I make the wrong choice or the right choice?
I don't know.
Because
before we go through, I mean, DC's check cleared this week, so we're talking predominantly about DC books this week. So for all those counting at home, Josh, because you were going to say,
Because I did read 52, and I thought, wow, everything in that story arc that would have happened within this issue. So those might have been 4 issues, but I don't know how much story they would have been able to cover.
Well, I'm not the DC guy, so let's start with Connor. What did you think, Connor?
I really liked them, and they were this whole 52 World War III thing was a close second in pick of the week. And if I had not been for Nightwing, they definitely would have done it. I would have picked all four of these books. I would have had to go into Photoshop and made a cover, and it would have been a pain in the ass. 1:30 in the morning.
And he's not good with Photoshop.
Not at 1:30 in the morning when I'm sick. This is a lot of story. Basically, what happened in these books, the reason these books exist is because even though they had 52 issues, they realized they didn't have enough time for all the story. And if you read Dan DiDio's notes, his little column thing in the book, he says, originally 52 was going to cover the time between the one-year-later book, Infinite Crisis, and they were going to explain all the changes and the leaps. And then when they got writing it, they realized they didn't want to do that. They just wanted to follow the story that they had mapped out. So these World War III books covered most of the characters' progressions that we never got to see. We saw what happened to Aquaman. We saw what happened to Martian Manhunter. We saw what happened to Wonder Girl. We saw what happened to Batgirl. We saw what happened to Firestorm. How Jason Todd got to New York. All the things that happened in the subsequent time that was missing were all covered in these books alongside of the war that happened in 52 Week 50.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that like I felt as if a lot of it happened, a lot of it culminated. We finally got a lot of the answers we were looking for, and but I felt as if it was just really fast. Like I mentioned, the Nightwing thing with it being the Red Hood. It took me two reads to figure out that was Jason Todd,
right?
And maybe I'm a moron, and maybe
I think you had to know that's what you're reading.
There was one
failing of it.
Yeah, there was no clarification of, and that was just one example. There was no other than some light narration and some, you know, like the Martian Manhunter being the narrator over it all and stuff like that. There was some stuff like the Aquaman stuff. I had no idea what they were talking about.
Right.
You know, like
and the thing is, that's a problem if you haven't read the other books.
Right. Other than that, I thought they were great. I thought they were great in terms of the progression between all four of the books. I thought the art was good. I actually thought the writing was, aside from not telling the story very well, I thought the writing, the dialogue and stuff was really good.
That doesn't make sense.
And I love the writing. This Keith Champagne. What a great name. That's an excellent name. I'm Keith Champagne. Like I just picture him walking around with, you know, like in a robe, and I don't know. But
the names were actually one of the reasons that I decided not to get them, just because I didn't know who Keith Champagne was.
Oh, he did a good job. Well,
and that's fine.
Yeah, he was good.
You know what? This was the victim of. This was the victim of years of bad DC events, and like my head just flashed back to like the Kingdom. In our world,
right? But
war.
This is 52. I mean, it's
no,
part
I know
of the
that,
really
but because
that.
It wasn't the 452 guys involved with it, I was just like, I'm not getting bit by the Ostrander again.
Yeah,
and I really like it was totally a case of you know 50 or DC fatigue. But
but the thing is that you like yourself some Black Adam though, don't you?
Well, I mean. I've never really thought about it in that terms, I suppose.
Well, no, but you've. I mean, no, I mean like Black Adam punched through Terra.
I don't know who Terra is, though.
It doesn't matter. There's a panel of him punching through her chest and his hand coming out her back.
Yeah.
And then him flying away with a bloody fist. It was just
It was crazy. It was a lot bloodier than
were there any mad scientists in it?
Briefly, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. He also ripped off a guy's face too.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was shocked at some of the violence. Like I thought it was really fun and it's like kind of over the top and it's like. But I was like, he punched a hole in Terra. Like he just punched a hole in her. She's dead. You know. And the thing is that like a lot of people died in these issues and a lot of heroes and stuff like that. And I really felt as if I know it's the World War and they've got to stop Black Adam. But I really feel as if the effect of those deaths really haven't been felt yet. You know, I didn't really feel it kind of felt overstylized, and that the deaths kind of happened, and then we moved on very quickly.
Well, I assume that those things will go on to happen in their own books.
Yeah,
except that the direct aftermath of this has already happened because of 1 year later.
Right.
So, that was a little bit of a mind blow right there. But
yeah, and did you hear me? Like my brain kind of skipped there.
Yeah, there was like a.
Yeah.
Another thing these books did was they foreshadowed the countdown.
Yeah.
It gives a slight pointer to that something is going to be involved with the monitors, and that's something to do with the countdown.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about it was one thing I hated was the Martian Manhunter. not in this book, in the 1 year later reboot. Yeah. I hated the book itself, but I didn't understand why he was so angry. And this book really shows you he goes through a whole progression. The Black Adam poisons his mind with his own mind, and then he becomes angrier. He calms down a bit, but at the end he realizes he's still pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
So
and adopts a new costume.
So how did this fit in with the issue 52, which I did read?
It expanded on scenes.
Does it take place in between the pages of this issue of 52?
Yes.
Okay, that's kind of what I got. Because in the beginning, like he's fighting Captain Marvel, and then that fight ends, and then they go somewhere else, and they fight some more.
And if Captain Marvel fights really long. It's all just expanding on. You've gotten the whole story with 52. You just haven't gotten
here. Do you have the issue 52,
I'm
Josh?
I'm looking at it.
If you open up to page 4, which starts off week 50, day 3, Australia. The fourth panel in the middle with the big girl falling by the Leaning Tower of Pisa, that's like an entire issue of World War III. That fight. Right, yeah. Yeah.
Does it look exactly like this?
Yeah, it actually does.
All right. So go DC.
There really is some continuity in this regard. I'm up, and there's almost the exact same panel, which is pretty
really
good.
That's really cool, because I was beginning to think that professional comic people couldn't do that.
No, I know. It's amazing. It is amazing. It's not exact, but it's close enough for me to give them the word.
And it was a really good scene, actually, in 52, where they're all at the Chinese border, and they can't go in.
I thought that was great, yeah.
But then there's a great scene in the World War III books where it expands on that scene, where there's a lot of nervous chatter between the heroes. Like, there's a whole long thing where they're all talking amongst each other, and they're all just, it's like nervously going off to war, and that was a really, really good scene.
The magnifying glass aspect, I think that's what it was, is that these four books were a magnifying glass of this issue of 52, which worked really well, and makes me wonder if they had planned it all along, or if it just kind of happened that way. You know, like one of those happy accidents.
They'd be like, well, it just happened, like the Black Spider-Man costume, and God knows what else.
I mean, you gotta give it up to Dan DiDio to say, look, we planned on doing it this way, and it didn't work out, so we changed it.
Right, if they really did make that change, that's pretty badass. Let me ask a Black Adam question. Is Black Adam really the most badass dude in DC, or was he just so pissed off that no one could take him down?
Both.
A little bit of both,
He's more powerful than Captain Marvel, which is Superman.
I look at the big page here, the big two-page spread, and you've got several Green Lanterns, Power Girl, who's Kryptonian, which makes her on par with Superman, and Wonder Woman. I think that'd be enough.
Think of it this way: if Superman were enraged and went off and sort of massacring people, they couldn't stop him either.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Supergirl's and Power Girl's not Kryptonian; she's from Earth 2.
But meanwhile, the mad scientist.
And you guys make fun of me.
She's not Kryptonian.
She's not strictly speaking the same as Superman. She's from Earth 2.
Did you read Infinite Crisis, Josh?
No.
You might want to go back and read it.
Not really. I'm fine.
Okay.
All I do is ask you guys. All these other people have to listen while I ask, but I figure there's somebody out there who doesn't know. So it's fine. No, I like sort of knowing halfway and figuring out as I go. It's fine by me. Okay.
Josh, what did you read this week?
What did I read? Where are we in this? I did read
another one with lots of superheroes.
I did read JLA, which, by the way, is if they didn't have enough characters already.
Oh my God.
It was just like, I was at the end of like, they're going to need a big table.
I was just like, I was, as I'm reading it, I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear what Connor thinks, because this might be it.
This was, I was reading this and like that voicemail we got the other week about the caption boxes. We're talking about JLA 8 now, by the way, just in case anybody wasn't following there.
Issue number 8.
And every single panel had a new character with their captions of various colors, and it was starting to get like difficult. Like,
what bothered me is that not only were there so many characters, and not only was the story jumping around like that, like a couple of people have called in complaining about, but like the narration from one scene continued into the story that jumped away from that scene.
Yeah, you know what? I thought while reading this issue that, as good as Meltzer did with the Identity Crisis miniseries, I don't think he's really got a handle on how to write comics yet.
I think that he's experimenting with the form and it's not working.
Yes.
He jumps around within the page, from scene to scene to scene, and it's just like, it's too confusing.
Yeah, it wouldn't work in a novel.
You lose the whole flow.
In a novel, that would be like each paragraph changing.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's too weird.
It's just too weird.
And you know what? The art didn't help. The fill-in art did not help.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like I'm coming down on this book because, after all, I'm really interested in it. I was like, it's pretty good. I wish it was laid out differently. I think story-wise, character-wise, I'm very happy with it. I still think there's too many damn characters. Why do we need Geo-Force or whatever the hell his name is? Like,
Why is he there?
Is he on the team now?
Apparently, they shoved him on the team at the last minute and we didn't know. And then you got this guy called the Karate Kid, who I've never heard of. He just takes Bruce fucking down.
He's a Legion of Superhero character.
Ever. It's like, I've never heard of him.
Well, that means he's not important now, doesn't it?
No, that's not what I mean, but like...
I know, I'm kidding. A lot of people haven't heard of him. But you're right, there's too many characters, there's too many stupid characters, and the pacing is off. But I do think there's a lot of good moments in it, which is hard because, you know...
Yeah, like, I mean, I thought there were... I agree with you. I thought there were good moments in it, but all in all, it felt so disjointed, you know?
But that was like a problem of the way it was formatted. I think the story, I'm interested. I want to know what's going on. I was interested in some of the interactions. I like the fact that Red Tornado is losing it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great scene.
They kicked him off a team.
Like, that was pretty cool. He's like, he just wanted to kill them. They're like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, ooh.
Sorry.
My bad.
So Josh, how are you going to do when there's six more Legion characters at the end of this?
Christ, I don't know. With the 19 JLA members and the 48 JSA
you know
members,
what?
Jesus,
Geoforce is on the team. He's listed under the roll call.
No, I know that, but like, when did they sneak that in?
Was he in the picture last week? That's what I want.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
They slipped one by us.
Yeah.
Damn.
I feel as if
13 JSA members, there's 10 Justice League members, we're adding 7 Legion characters.
Was this issue supposed to come out
30 characters?
Was this printed correctly? Was this printed in the right place? Or was it printed like is this actually issue number 10 and they printed it by accident? Or like what happened?
I don't know.
Oh, it's so confusing.
I liked the Captain America. The Karate Kid Batman fight. I liked the double page spread at the end where they were all talking.
I love that page. That was great.
Yeah. That was
always the best part of the JSA.
Do the Hawks know each other?
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh yeah. It's a great story. He wants them to be together, and she's just like whatever.
She's a great character.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Because that was the whole thing that Hawkman and Hawkgirl, and Connor, correct me if I'm wrong, but Hawkman and Hawkgirl have always been together. You know, like
throughout time,
and then in this latest incarnation of them, when Hawkman came back and he went to Hawkgirl, and he's like, "All right, how you me?" And she's just like, "Whatever, see you later, dude." And like, and he got all upset and pissed, and it was like a great romance, kind of like pseudo kind of romance thing, and like Hawkman just didn't get it, and she was just like, "I don't even know you." Like, it was just like that all happened in the JSA books, right?
Yeah, and their solo books.
I
forgot that she is a member also of the Birds of Prey now, so she's on two teams.
Jesus.
Yeah.
She's pretty bad. I just gave a chuckle because I looked down at that page and I saw that Batman has a teacup and saucer. No one else does.
Yeah, yeah, which I didn't think that was really funny.
Now, what really annoyed me about this panel was that Power Girl's boobs are on sideways.
A little Liefeld action there.
Oh god.
Yeah, they are.
I mean that's just the worst kind of, well, we got to show her cleavage, so even though she's facing the other way, we're going to point her cleavage.
They should the boob on the inside should be smaller than this one because of perspective, and it's not. They're just twisted.
That was my problem with the art. It's not good.
This is the beginning of the Power Girl Black Canary leading the two most powerful teams in DC year that we're going to go through now.
I like that though. I like that's a good step forward, but
diversity through hot blonde chicks.
Well, didn't you see that there was that whole thing that Hillary Clinton's going to win the presidential election because it's just another line of powerful blonde women, some blog post or something about that? I was like, oh, God.
You know what? We shouldn't talk about this.
No, we shouldn't. Let's talk about the X-Men.
All right.
Ultimate. Overall, I don't want it to sound like we didn't like – I liked this book. It was fine, but it's just –
I don't know what to think about
it. It's a handful.
I'm perplexed.
I was in 75% like.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So – anyway, so remember how we were saying how great Ultimate X-Men is now?
Yeah, forget that.
Yeah, not so much.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is this a thing? When I read an X-Men book, Ultimate or otherwise, I have no idea if it's good or not. If I get through it and I feel like I didn't lose my way, then I'm like, hey, I guess that was pretty good.
Oh, enough of that. Whatever.
I'm not kidding. I'm not being facetious at all.
Yeah. It's easy. Okay, enough of this, the stereotypical bashing. But no,
let's get out of the way that Ben Oliver's awesome.
Yeah, no, Ben Oliver's art is great. No, and I'm being a little too over-judgmental.
I want to know what you didn't like about it, because I don't know.
The Beast is alive again.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Oh,
I mean, one of the points that we had for Ultimate X-Men was that shit happens, and like, for example, when the main character's Beast died 50 issues ago, and they haven't brought him back, and then, lo and behold, now he's back.
Yeah, I didn't read those, so I guess it didn't.
Yeah. And not only is he back, but he's back and he's fighting the Legacy Virus, which is a 616 Marvel storyline thing that is now just being shoehorned into the Ultimate Universe.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it lacked a little bit of the originality that we've been seeing for the past couple.
That's
of
my
weeks.
Point. Ultimate X-Men is way too tied into the regular continuity.
Yes, it's more redos of the regular continuity.
Spider-Man is he's really, really branching out and trying new things and new stories, new characters. Ultimate X-Men is just redoing all the stories from the original continuity.
But what I did think was surprising was that I really, of all the characters in the X-Men universe, I didn't think that they'd ultimize any of Joe Casey's like Stacy X. But there she is. There's Ultimate Stacy.
I liked her.
She's in the beginning with it when they sprung Mystique out from
she was
the
girlfriend. That's who that is. Yeah. Got it. She was her power. She was like the hooker who had
the pheromones. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a great character.
Yeah. So it was good. I really liked her, and I thought that, you know, it was kind of lost. And the thing is that, again, carrying through like the template of an X-Men story is like, okay, you know, like they're trying to be a school and they disbanded the X-Men. Like, this has all kind of happened, you know what I mean? Like, and now we're getting to the Morlocks, and now we're, you know, like it's just kind of like there was – and the thing
– It's too close. It's just too close.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Ben Oliver's art is really, really good though. And
I liked the scene with Cyclops and the Grizzly Kid.
That was good.
See, the thing is, I'm not very connected to the old X-Men stuff, so.
But that's not. I'm not either.
Well, no, it's familiar to me, but.
Right, and that's the thing is, like, it's kind of like it's almost easy.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's just like, well, we got another issue. Let's just redo this one.
Yeah, like if there are aspects of the book that, like, somebody like Connor doesn't regularly read the X-Men and you even remember it or get it, then So it's like, but we'll see. I mean, who knows? Of course, now Bishop getting the team back together, that's always kind of fun. So I'm curious to see where it goes. But I was
it's just not blazing any new trails like Spider-Man is. It's not holding to the idea that things actually happen in the Ultimate Universe because everybody's getting Professor X came back last month. Beast is back this month.
Well, give it a second. Like,
I know.
Four issues. You guys have been all over this. This is one issue. Yeah. It's not like
this is a major thing. The Beast of Dying has been a major.
Yeah, that was a major point in the whole run of the issue of the run so far. But the thing is, like, I know what's going to happen is that Bishop's going to get Storm back together. They're going to do something, and somehow their paths are going to cross with Beast, because Storm and Beast were kind of together right when Beast died, and that's going to, you know, like, that's the conflict that we're heading towards. You know, like, I already can see it, and you know, and I'm not even a writer, and if I can see it,
well.
You know, so I mean,
you've based your life on the X-Men's teaching for decades now, so
yeah, so whatever.
You
but it
should
was okay.
be able to see.
Yeah, so yeah, but it was. I mean, it was all right. I mean, that was just my one major kind of annoyance. But I'm patient enough. I'm gonna stick with it because Ben Oliver's doing that well of a job, and Kirkman has done that well. I would hope that if they're doing this, it's for a reason. I guess that's what I'm saying. So, yeah.
So when you picked this up and you saw the cover, you were like, "What the fuck?"
Yes. Yeah. Literally, I said, "Oh God!" I went, "God damn it!" All
right.
So.
Clue.
Anyway, so another book that came out this week that I wanted to talk about real quickly was Girls number 24, which was the giant size conclusion of the 24 issue opus from the Luna Brothers from Image Comics. I'm the only one who's been reading.
You
this
be careful because I really want to read this. And I,
all right, yeah, no, I won't give anything away.
The trades.
I read the first issue. You mean buy it for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, so I'm curious to see if anything happened.
I mean, yeah, basically, you know, the nutshell of the story was that it's a small town in the middle of nowhere, and there's this weird kind of see-through shell around the town, and there's a giant sperm monster in the middle of the town.
Well, yeah.
And it's spawning off these naked women, and every time a man has sex with one of the women, they spawn more women. And every time these women run into other women, they kill them. And it's basically, this has been the tale of the town, you know, freaking out, figuring out what's happening, figuring out what to do. And this is basically, like I said, the conclusion. It all kind of circles around the main character of Ethan, who's like a, you know, 20-something kid who's living in that town, and he was the first one to sleep with one of these girls, and that's what kind of started it all.
Is this book not an excuse just to draw naked women?
Because
what I got out of the book.
It sounds like an adolescent fantasy.
No, and it's not. I mean, there's a lot of naked women, and there's just so many that you kind of forget that they're naked and you don't even see them like that. And these women, they're aliens or something. They don't talk. They don't. I mean, all they are, they're naked. But the thing is that it was really kind of almost in the vein of like a disaster movie. You know how like when shit happens and there's like – it's like the eight people left on Earth and what they do. You know, and like and somebody freaks out and somebody kills somebody else. Yeah, no, it's not Walking Dead though. It's not
that's
not
the same.
Right, no, but it's not.
Premise.
It's not. It's not the same regard. Yeah, well, it's a different. I mean, it's same from that macro, but it's different in a way, and I can't really describe it. But it's more about the relationships and the people and a lot of gender role stuff because it comes down to a point where like at one point the women take over and they lock all the men up and then the men take over and it's all kind of back and forth. So it's really kind of interesting to see what normal people do in these kind of extreme kind of moments. And each set of characters have their own kind of little subplots that are going on, and you kind of get attached to some of them and you see how they progress. The art has been amazing. I love the Luna Brothers art. I think that, you know, that back from their work on Ultra and even this, like the art is, it's just got this great original style that is, and they play really well with, and it's obviously digitally altered, but they play with like out of focus stuff in the background and stuff in the foreground in focus. And
I like them a lot. I liked Ultra a lot. I read that.
Yeah, Ultra was
really good.
So. Yeah. So my one complaint about it, though, is just that, and I'll warn you, Josh, before you read it, or Connor, when you read it, when it comes out in trade, is that it's just long. Like, it's 24 issues, and I don't think it was originally supposed to be 24 issues, and I kind of feel like the story got away from them for a little bit because there was a lot of redundancy and a lot of repetitiveness once in and around, like, issue 10 through 20.
Well, they're perhaps not the most seasoned of writers.
Well, I'm not criticizing their seasoning,
well,
but yeah.
I mean, well, they're both fairly young, and besides this and Ultra, yeah, you know, they're at the beginning of their career, so
yeah, possibly I could see that. Yeah, Jonathan and Joshua. Yeah, I could possibly see that. Like, it just felt as if like the same scene happened several times.
It sounds like they're really, really good at coming up with concepts.
Yeah,
here's a big concept thing, and this is without – I've read a couple interviews and stuff, and I know the idea of it, but I haven't read any of it. I'm definitely going to.
Yeah. So, I mean, all in all, it was a great series. I'm glad I got it in issues. I'm glad I got it for these past 2 years, and it was really, really good. I would give it like maybe like an 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 purely because I thought it meandered at times. But other than that, it's just stunning to look at, and it was really engaging. And I'm excited to sit down and read all 24 issues in a row now that they're out. So good time. So,
were you happy with the ending? Do you think it had a good ending?
Yeah, no, it ended. So it ended with that. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
It was satisfying?
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, yeah, it didn't blow me away or anything. It wouldn't have been my pick, but it was definitely, I mean, it was worth talking about. And plus, it was a huge, thick issue, and it was only $2.99. So doesn't get any much better than that. So, man, what a week. God, I'm just holding my stack, and it's like, Connor, mine is like an inch and a half thick, too.
We were trying to figure out what books to talk about on the show, and I read like 16 books. I had no idea.
Yeah. So it's miserable.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, and there are other great books. I mean, X-Factor was out this week, DMZ, The Spirit, Adjectiveless X-Men, Ex Machina, Mighty Avengers. I mean, like, it was ridiculous.
Robin, yeah.
Robin, yeah. Batman, Blue Beetle, Brave and the Bold. Ultimate Spider-Man was good.
Funny, you know, I missed that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, it was just
you need to start bringing a list with you.
I did bring a list. I've been bringing a list for months.
Oh, God. All right, so now's a good time to talk about Netflix. This is our second week of our new sponsorship from Netflix.com. If you haven't heard of Netflix, it's a great way to rent DVDs. You go on their website, and you can pick out from over 75,000 titles, and there are no late fees, and they'll mail you the discs you choose. And then after you watch it, you can keep it for as long as you want, and then you mail it back to them, and they send you the next one that you pick. And they've got plans starting from $4.99 and up, and when you sign up at Netflix.com, www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you get a free two-week trial. So check it out. We love the Netflix.
And you can watch The West Wing all the way through.
Yes, a lot of TV shows. They've got HD DVD and Blu-ray stuff if you're that ahead of the game. And but remember, you got to go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. Important to have the www there. It doesn't work.
That helps us out.
Yeah.
Listener mail time.
All right.
Our first letter comes from Quack Talk, who is a regular on the iFanboy forum.
Hey!
Yes. He says, first, thanks for the insight and advice every week on comics. You're welcome. He has a quick question. After I read Watchmen for the first time, meh, just wasn't my thing. Watchmen has the nice distinction of being on Time's greatest 100 novels of the present. Hypothetically, if it wasn't Watchmen, what comic book or graphic novel would you want to have on that list?
To be at the top of the list or be on the list?
On the list, instead of Watchmen.
Mouse.
But Watchmen
was on Time's greatest 100 novels of the modern.
Right. Wasn't it the best one?
Watchmen.
Watchmen is not the greatest novel of all time.
I think it was.
I don't think it was. Regardless, he didn't like Watchmen, so he wants to know what else would be on there if not for Watchmen.
Mouse.
That's my first thought. And I say it like it's such an easy answer, but really it is deservedly so.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Father, if you're talking about other superhero comics, I would say, I guess, Dark Knight Returns.
I guess, but I don't know if that's up there with all, you know.
I think other than the fact that Watchmen used like made up characters, whereas Dark Knight is about Batman's, you know, specifically.
Right. Yeah. But, well, Watchmen isn't about made up. I mean, Watchmen is more made up than Batman.
Right. But those characters aren't tied to anything else. Whereas,
but it's not in the cultural zeitgeist.
Exactly.
All characters are made up.
Yeah.
I know that, but like Batman's, you know, you say Batman, it carries a lot of baggage with him. Half people think of Adam West and, you know, Michael Keaton or whatever. Right. But on its own, like from a literary standpoint and artistic standpoint, Dark Knight Return is still.
Right. Oh, it looks like the list isn't actually ranked. It's just the 100 best ones. So there's no like number one.
Oh,
you know.
Right.
So, sorry about that.
It's Mouse.
I guess it would have to be Mouse. I mean, I think that's the only one that I can think that deserves to be on that same level as, like, you know, fucking Catch-22. So
it's got to be something else, but it won't come to me. It's Mouse.
Yeah. Okay. Our next email comes from Derek, who says, you know, maybe it's because he doesn't check out our forums or our site, but he thinks we lack our indie cred. Other than Strangers in Paradise, what else are you guys reading that's indie? And Image Comics doesn't count. Mouse Guard, Street Angel, Amazing Joy Buzzards, Courtney Cromran, Death Note. Are we? Do we not have any indie cred, guys? What's up with that?
We haven't got one of these in months.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
The your corporate sellout. I don't know. We like things that other people.
I think Derek has never seen the video show.
Yeah, the video show, we talk about a lot of indie stuff. The thing, and I had this conversation today actually with one of our listeners, and the thing with indie comics is that on this podcast here, we talk about the weekly books that come out, and like I have a small store that often, and I don't pre-order, and they often don't take a risk on indie comics, and so I get indie comics in a large batch when I come out to San Francisco, go to Isotope, go to Manhattan, go to Midtown, or go to Hanley's. Like, I'll buy a ton, and unfortunately, through the vein of iFanboy, we never really get a chance to talk about it.
Through the weekly podcast, through the video show.
Yeah, exactly.
Though.
Video show, we try to highlight that stuff, but also on ifanboy.com and in the forums. I mean, like, last week Optic Nerve number 11 came out. And you know, and unfortunately I got it after we did recorded the show, and I got it read. I'm like, this is great, and I wrote about it, you know. So
I don't check the forums, and you know,
yeah,
I just ordered a whole buttload of indie trades and stuff based on a thread that I did on the site, so they're coming soon. And
indie comics are hard. This is the problem. Is that indie comics? I mean, like, unless you're really dedicated to them, like Charlito and Mr. Phil over at Indie Spinner Rack. I mean, like, like I said, I buy them in large stacks at a time. So.
And I also.
But then that's where you go for the video show. I mean, we highlight a lot of indie stuff on the video.
Exactly.
Show.
Exactly.
And by the way, the idea that Image Comics doesn't count, I think is BS.
Yeah, I do.
Because Image Comics, if you're doing a comic for Image Comics, they're not paying you until it sells.
Yep.
You're doing a book, and that's just another publishing arm. It's going taking your book to Image Comics isn't any different than taking your book to Top Shelf or Drawn and Quarterly or whatever.
Yep. Oh yeah, and we were talking about, I mean, on iFanboy.com, we were talking about The Surrogates, which was from Top Shelf. And you know, like, yeah, we talk about this. We talk about some stuff.
Issue number 7 of Action Philosophers. You don't hear me bragging about it.
Yeah. So. Exactly. So check out the video show. Check out ifanboy.com. Check out our forums, and I think you'll be surprised, and that we actually do know what we're talking about. Not that I need to prove myself to you.
I know.
So.
Oh boy, Richard N. from.
Orbro.
Somewhere in Sweden.
It's an O with two dots.
I don't know how that sounds.
Or bro. Sweden.
Wow, I just insulted everyone in Sweden. I apologize.
Don't read it in a Swedish accent.
I wasn't going to.
You started.
He writes in and says, for the last year or so, I've been dabbling in comic book scripting. Who hasn't? And it really hasn't changed the way I read comics. Before, I was looking for great stories with emotional content, but now I'm more and more looking at the craft behind scripting, the pacing and the beats, the way scenes are constructed, etc. Not only has this changed the way I read new comics, but it also changed the way I look at the books in my collection. Some books that I really enjoyed, I now find are pretty poorly crafted, bad pacing, missing beats, etc. Whereas some books where the overall story is pretty uninteresting can be pretty well crafted. So my question is, do you think about these things when you read a new comic? Do you look at the craft behind it, or are you just looking for a good story without bothering about the way it's presented?
Well,
yes and no. I mean, yes and no.
Either or.
Yeah, right? Yes and no.
I mean,
I'm reading it for it to be a good story, and if it's well crafted, then it's a good story.
You know what?
Right?
It's really good though is that when you normally look for those kind of things, and then you forget about it.
Yeah.
Like if you're reading a book, and I do what he says a lot. I really look at books like that, and I think about them because, you know, I've harbored ideas of writing comics. I've made some attempts. I've tried it a few times, and it's hard. It's really hard, and. You know, sometimes I think about that, but the best books are the ones where you aren't thinking about that because you're so wrapped up in what's going on and it moves so smoothly and evenly that you don't notice it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Conversely, a good book that's not well crafted, like this week's JLA number 8, will really stand out if it's not well put together.
Right, exactly. And that's from somebody who's heralded as a great writer, but it's not well crafted.
He is a good writer, it's just he didn't do it. Yeah. And like a book like Spirit, which is very well crafted in a comic book sense, that stands out because it is so well done. So
fuck, that book is good, by the way. Anyway, sorry. Anyway.
But it stands at either one. If it's a good story, it could be good because it's probably well put together if it's a good story. Because if it's a badly put together story, it'll stand out.
Yeah, exactly.
That sort of critical way of reading, though, I think it's a nice evolution, because when you tend to like a lot of stuff – You tend to notice isn't as good as you know before, but then the stuff that is really good stands out to you and is just all the more crisp, and you know, it just seems all the more better when you can really recognize that craft in it.
Yeah.
When you have more media training, then you tend to be more discerning. Do you guys remember when we started college? The three of us all went to college for production. And do you guys remember that first year when, after a few classes, you started watching TV and really starting noticing things?
Oh my God, it ruined it for me.
It ruined
and
so many
everyone TV. Any of us have ever had to watch TV with.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's kind of like what you see behind the curtain. Yeah. So yeah. It's kind of like the thing with TV that I realized is the moment like on sitcoms when they're like in the bedroom and they're going to bed and then they turn off the light, and then the moment they turn off the light in the room, that like blue light turns on, yeah. so they can still film them in bed, and like that was the moment when I'm like, "Oh, wait a minute. Oh, and I totally knew how they did that." And that was what blew it for me. So, anyway. Oh, well. All right, our last email comes from Shem from Warsaw, Poland. Well, this is iFanboy International this week.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the indie guy's from Canada, so that was a...
Yeah, so is that a theme? Was that a theme that I missed out on? Or...
No.
Okay.
Serendipity.
All right, so Shem from Warsaw, Poland. What do we think about the future of comics will be from our perspective? With the discussion about having electronic comics downloadable like our podcast, do we ever see a possibility? Electronic better than paper? Paper to be doomed in a few years? Possible animations?
Well, animation ain't comics anymore.
Yeah.
It's cartoons.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, my personal belief on this is that yes, it's coming. You already got Pullbox online from the Devil's Due guys who are allowing downloadable comics. There's already, I hear rumors of ways to download comics, you know, through some sort of torrenting system. Not that I've ever heard of, seen that, or done it.
Really interesting. I've never heard of such a thing.
But I think it's a catchway too, because I definitely think it's the future. I definitely think it's going to be the way it's going to, you know, comics are going to be more and more, you know, accessible, you know, in an electronic format, especially if, you know, some people have been experimenting using the Sony PSP, the Sony e-reader, all these other great devices. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you know, I took my comics, you know, on the train with me, or I want to go sit down on the couch and hold it tangibly.
It's going to have to be a reader. It's going to have to be a good reader.
But the thing is that I don't think paper will ever go away. I just think that it will be diminished in its importance.
It'll probably become more of a specialty item.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the comics that you read will actually probably become more expensive.
Yeah.
And if you want them, it's fine. You'll have to pay a premium for them. You'll have to pay for them.
Yeah, like hardcover collections and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, so.
But I could see the monthly issue really going down. I don't think like the trades and book collections; those have probably got a long life.
Yeah,
but it's possible that the thing that'll really take the hit will be the monthly issues, as opposed to, you know, the printed work as a whole.
Hey, but here's the deal. If I could subscribe to my monthly issues and get them digitally the same way I get podcasts, or, you know, some sort of subscription service, and I download them and I have a device that I can read them on my commute or around the house or at the gym or something like that, and then, you know, and I'm paying, you know, 50 cents an issue or something like that, and then I can choose whether I want to buy the hardcover collecting of like with the art and all that kind of stuff, I'd do that in a second.
That's
That'd be awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So,
and you know,
and once again, we solve the problems of the comic industry on our podcast.
There's an environmental benefit to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Damn it.
The other thing to keep in mind is that comic book readers, on a general whole, are not very forward thinking.
Right, and a lot of people.
No, it's true. If you ever bring this subject up, most of them scream about not wanting to lose paper, and that's just a lot of this nostalgia based.
Yeah,
and most comic
you would count yourself among that.
No, I would totally go for Ron's subscription-based service.
I'm shocked to hear
that. I got books stacked everywhere. I got no more space.
I think a couple.
I literally have no more space.
Josh, I think a couple of years ago he was singing a different tune, but I think he's coming around.
Yeah, I think he has. I'm pleased to see the progress. GeekArmor.com is our sponsor, in addition to Netflix, and they sell T-shirts with the geek in mind. Heavy focus on comic book T-shirts and video game, sci-fi, movie, ironic T-shirts, some might say, all sorts of stuff like that. So if you like that kind of stuff, you should go check them out, and thank you very much for sponsoring us. That's Geek Armor, which is GeekArmor.com.
Armor
That's what I said, isn't it? No. Well, it's not the British kind. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's not Armour.
Armoire. All right, cool.
Geek Love?
So if you have anything you wanted to email us about, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Please
and
do.
Now we will dive into our voicemails.
It's an alumni week.
It is.
I'm not going to lie to you.
And here's our first one.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Jimski calling from St. Louis. I have a weird question for you, or one to ponder anyway. Let's say a friend of yours has a little son who's recently started to get into comic books. Your friend goes online to try and find out more about this new hobby that her six-year-old son is interested in, and she comes across, I don't know, let's say the Newsarama message boards, and then comes to you and says, why on earth would I want my son to grow up and become one of these people? I guess my real question is, when you look back on the influence that comic books have had in your life, what good character traits would you say have been nurtured as a result of you reading? Like, are you a better person because you read comics? And if so, why? Are there, in contrast, are there things about you that are worse because you read comic books, do you think? And if so, what are they? Thank you for this obscure puzzler of a question. Bye-bye.
That's a fantastic question, Jim.
That's a great question. You know what I actually think? You know what I'm actually reminded of? And I think the best person to answer these questions would probably be our parents. No, because you know, because it's funny, because I overheard my mom talking to somebody at like a family get together and saying, "Yeah, no, when he was like 13, I thought these were the stupidest things, but he's really turned out okay." Which I think is true. I think the majority of people who read comics, I mean, if you look now, especially where we are, especially with, you know, the internet generation and tech and stuff like that, a lot of people who are making movies, who are making websites, who are doing stuff, all read comics.
Yeah, and I don't think that the community at Newsarama is necessarily the
representative. Yeah.
It's the vocal minority.
It's the fringe. I definitely, I mean, I have a much better vocabulary as a result. It's reading. It's the same as reading any book. I know I'll say words that I know from comics, and people will be like, "What's that mean?"
You know. I think it's helped me a lot with creativity in my yep. job and my everyday life. You know, because I look at things more visually. I look at things more. You know, kind of that whole. I mean, and actually, she should pick up. It might be a little hard for a 6-year-old, but Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics.
That's very hard for a 6-year-old.
Right, it might be hard for an adult too, but the thing is that it really explains comics in juxtaposition and like the intellectual side of comics, and I mean how it is as an art form and a storytelling form, and I mean I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think the qualities that we have from it are like Connor said, our vocabulary, our ability to understand, you know, juxtaposition and storytelling, and just generally I think we're just swell people because
as corny as it sounds, there's a certain moral code I have from that.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's a certain morality of good and versus evil, right and wrong.
Well, that really depends on the kind of comics that you're talking about.
Right.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, but it did make me lament because I was going to be like, oh, tell her 6-year-old to come to our site, and I was like, no,
she
shouldn't come to our site either.
negative. Do you think that there's like a trait that is common to people who read comics? Like, is there something that we all have in common, or is it?
I think it's creativity. I think like we're not an individualism as well. I mean, I don't really think there's a lot of, you know, like following the flock. The people I know read comics. Everybody seems to be really unique. Everybody likes their own bit. Mm-hmm. You know, like everybody takes what they want from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also asked what is negative about it.
That's easy.
Well, what is negative about it is
it's a compulsive disorder.
Yeah. Continuity obsession. Obesity.
Oh, that's awful.
I'm kidding.
You know, right, what's surprising to me is that I think a lot of those like geek tropes are not necessarily not with like with our audience or the people who are on our community. Like every, you know, dudes are married, there's girls there. Yeah. You know, none of those things, they're just people. They're, you know, it's not social outcasts. They're not, you know, without the ability to communicate with people. They're just people with jobs and relationships and lives, and they like this kind of entertainment.
Yep.
There you go.
All right. Good question, Jimski. All right.
He raised the bar.
He did. Well, and the challenge has been met by our next voicemail.
Well, this is Daryl, and I'm cold. I have a cold, and I'm sick. But I just have a thing I want to leave about Justice League. I enjoy this book because it has a respect for the previous history of the Justice League, but still, it's still modern and new heroes and I mean, people have never been on the Justice League before, like Black Lightning and GeoForce, and it's just a nice mixture. And stuff that you say is old school storytelling, I just say it's just fun, really fun. And one thing I do really like about, I love the satellite. I love the idea of a Hall of Justice. I mean, and these heroes are not like the Avengers. They're not like, you know, the X-Men and all that type of Marvel stuff, because they actually want to be superheroes. Not because they had to or felt kind of responsibility, but just because they want to. And you can see that and feel that in their stories. So I really like the run so far, and I think it should be given a chance. Later.
Man, that was another great voicemail from Daryl. That's excellent. I just decided to drop the act.
But he makes some good points. I mean I definitely see the argument that he makes, and I think that's I respect it. And I'm still buying Justice League, and I'm right there with you, Daryl. So
I mean, again, Connor didn't like it.
Yeah,
like that doesn't that not all of us didn't like. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I you know could have been better in parts or whatever, but we're not overall saying it was crappy.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
we're overly critical sometimes too. So
well, stop.
Yeah, we talk about it.
So good job,
make everyone happy.
All right, and our last voicemail's got some news.
Hello, iFanboys. This is your friend Jim Syme from the Isotope in San Francisco. I don't know if you guys know, but I was one of the ISER judges this year. I'm calling you from San Diego because I wanted you guys to be the first ones to know Project X Cup Noodle nominated for an Eisner for Best Reality-Based Work. You're the first ones to know, man. Woo! Bye.
Breaking news.
Unfortunately, we had to sit on this.
By the time you hear this, it's not breaking anymore.
Yeah, we had to sit on this for several days after we got it. but yeah, the Eisner Award and the Eisner nominees came out, and it's really interesting this year. It's a little different. I don't know. Did you guys get a chance to look at it? Or?
I haven't even.
Not as in detail, but Brubaker really cleaned up. As you would expect.
And like,
the exciting thing for me is the Cup Noodle nomination, which is like almost feels like a personal vindication.
Exactly, Cup Noodle, and like I think it got two nominations for. They added a manga or a Japanese comic, and then it got the reality based one, which is awesome. But I think it was really interesting. Like, there's no like Alan Moore wasn't nominated for anything.
Well, some said that Lost Girls got shafted.
Yeah, no, I think some might think it did get checked.
Come on,
I mean,
I did a sexual pun there. I got nothing?
Oh, nice. Over our heads.
Funny. But, no Alex Ross anywhere.
What did he do this year?
He did Justice?
He did Justice. Yeah. He did Interiors, too.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did Interiors.
I think people are over him.
So, I mean, it's good to see some people getting a chance. I think it's good.
It's great to see some new names on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so good
outside
job.
Outside of the talent deserving wider recognition, that one.
They changed the name of that, by the way.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, because I was talking to James about it. I shouldn't say this, but he said, he was just like, what if you lose that? Like, the people who lose it, don't they feel bad? So they changed the name of the category.
They don't deserve to. Not more people should. More people shouldn't know about this.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it says.
That's like when they did the Oscars. They changed from the winner is to the Oscar goes to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're all winners. So I think they changed it to special recognition. I think that's what it is now.
I always thought that talent deserving wider recognition was so clear.
Yeah, but it was when you think about it from the other side, it is kind of mean.
If you get nominated, it's an honor just to be nominated.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Sounds like a loser talking.
Well, I've never been nominated for anything.
You know what's tough, though, is that the best reality-based work, while Cup Noodle is nominated, it's up against Fun Home by Alison Bechdel, which is probably going to win, and Mom's Cancer by Brian Fies, and, you know, like, I see a hard time for Cup Noodle actually taking the award.
So, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's really not as much personal heart in it.
Yeah,
lightning bolts and shrimp don't win out over trying to come out against your family's conservative idea.
Freeze drying. So, all right.
Come on. I feel like we had a 1%.
We must have had something to do with that.
Oh, we definitely did. We brought the Cup Noodle. I mean, George Corey wrote about it in Newsarama when it came out, and then we pushed it. And you know, like it's been. I mean, I think it's been a team effort, really. So.
Thank God right. that the men who created that, whose names I don't know.
Something Fugiyama.
Is it? Do they do all the Project X, or are they different teams?
They're different teams. They're
okay,
because
I'm holding
I've got Cup Noodle here. It's, it's, where are the names?
Miyamoto.
Tadashi Kato.
Nice.
I butchered that, but whatever.
I love his early work.
Yeah. So, all right. So, if you want to give us a call and tell us what you think, or if you're anything, I don't know. Who cares? Just call 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
Or if your machine is broken.
Don't forget about emailing us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can go to ifanboy.com where there's a ton of in-depth comic book discussion and our forums. Where you and you can post on ifanboy.com, tell people what you think, what you liked about the books, and all that fun stuff.
You can go to comicspace.com/ifanboy and be our friend, or you can do it also at myspace.com/ifanboy, and we'll have a few more of those soon to add to the list.
Because we want friends. and if you like the show, one way that you can help us out is you can go to Podcast Alley or Podcast Pickle or any of those aggregators and rate us and vote for us or do whatever. Or if you can, if you haven't written a review in iTunes and you like the show, you know, please do that. Or if the video show, if you haven't done a review in iTunes for that, that would be really, really helpful. More so than that, even better is if you think that you know someone who might like the kind of stuff we're doing on here, tell them about it and, you know, send them a link, email them,
yeah.
Tell people. Tell your comic shop people.
Definitely. And if you dig what we're doing here on ifanboy.com and you want to go to ifanboy.com/donations, we accept all donations. You can do it through PayPal and through any denomination you like. And it all goes to this show and to our video show, which comes out every Wednesday and can be seen at revision3.com/ifanboy or on ifanboy.com. And we're pretty much here to serve you people. So, you people. So I think that wraps it up.
Isn't that offensive?
It might be. Not in the context I used it, though. So.
It's hard to say. Context is subjective.
Yeah, it's subjective. So, all right, so that wraps up for this week. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.
And we'll see you next week. Go Cup Noodle.
Zing! Bye, bye.